program at the National Arboretum. And this Basham's Party Pink is what BPP is for, and that is actually a cultivar that they found in the wild that naturally hybridized. They think that it's related to these seedlings here, but nobody has known for sure, and so we grouped them later on up in these orthogonal contrast, and there are medium and tall cultivars in each one of those. In the no-choice tests, we did see that there was significant differences between the major parentages and also within the medium and tall height class, and this is in congruence with what Mizell and Knox found in 1993. And we don't see any differences until we get to the medium and tall class within the Basham's Party Pink. My advisor, Dr. Mizell, also had some data showing that Chrysoprolla rufolabris larvae had differential survivorship depending on aphids being reared on different cultivars. And what I wanted to look at was whether the survivorship was strictly determined by parentage, plant height, or just simply cultivar itself. So we reared crepe myrtle aphids in these sleeve cages out in the field. They're very easy to rear since there's no parasitoids. We can use nice big sleeves, and all we have to do is keep out the coccinellates. We ordered some Chrysoprolla rufolabris eggs, and we held them in well plates until hatching. And the first instar larvae were put into their own little deli cup. These were placed into groups of 10 and then assigned to a plant within a cultivar. They were fed aphids from one particular plant from one particular cultivar. We used the same 7 cultivars as I did for the leaf disc tests, and there were 4 replications. We measured the percent that made it to pupation, the percent from pupation to adult, and then the total survivorship to adult, and then we dried them down and took their dry weight as well. In order to analyze the data, we did the appropriate transformations and put them in the PROC GLM, and we used the same contrasts as we did in the leaf disc experiments. And if you look at the survivorship to the pupal stage, there's only one difference, and this is between the two cultivars, Sousa and Natchez, and this is one of those medium-tall differences that seems to be appearing. If we look at the number that pupated that made it to an adult, we see that there's still that difference in Sioux and Natchez, but if you look at it, it's the reverse of what it used to be. So in total survivorship, this comparison here goes away. Now we see a difference between the cuttings in the seedlings in the Basham's Party Pink lines, and we also see these differences in Lipan and Tuscarora and other medium tall. But what's interesting is we don't see these major parentage differences like we did with aphid susceptibility. If we look at the total survivorship, we still don't see a difference in the major parentages, but we do see a difference between these cuttings that were taken along a river in Japan and the seedlings that were brought back from China and Basham's Party Pink, which is supposedly related to that. And we also see this difference in Lipan and Tuscarora in this medium-tall relationship staying there as well. The interesting thing about this goes into tritrophic interactions. If we bring up the data from the aphid suitability tests that I did in the laboratory, you can see that Carolina Beauty is poorly suitable for the crepe myrtle aphid, but it's very good for Chrysoprolla rufolabris to feed on and survive. And likewise, Appalachia is a poor prey item for Chrysoprolla rufolabris, and it happens to be a good host for crepe myrtle aphids. We don't think that this is necessarily related to nutrition, because if you look at the dry weights, we don't see the same types of patterns as we saw in the other two experiments. So we think that this is probably related to toxins. And basically, overall, what we see is that in 4 of the 7 cultivars that we tested, we see an inverse relationship from aphid suitability and the survivorship of Chrysoprolla rufolabris. This doesn't appear to be parentage related like it was with the aphids, but it seems to be dependent on the pedigree and the mature plant height within there. We'd like to do some future experiments by doing field testing in sleeves and releasing the larvae directly into those sleeve cages. And it would also be nice to do some suboptimal or mixed diet experiments where we can limit the number of prey items and control how much caloric intake that they have during all of this. some of this work has already been done with other aphid species. I'd like to thank my advisory committee, Dr. Mizell, of course, and all of the other ones that you see in front of you. And at this time, I'll take any questions that you might have. Thank you.
Well, good morning, everybody, and thank you for coming to my talk. The study that I'm going to present to you guys today is part of an ongoing project on classical biological control of Diaprepes abreviatus with egg parasitoids. And today I'm going to talk about specifically about Haeckeliana esperata. So our target organism is Diaprepes abreviatus, that is a root weevil native to the Lesser Antilles that was unintentionally introduced to Florida in the 1960s. And since then, it has expanded its geographical reach throughout Central and South Florida. And recently, Diaprepes reached Texas and California as well. Haeckeliana esperata, it's a gregarious endoparasitoid that was imported to Florida from the island of Dominica in an attempt to establish a permanent mortality factor of Diaprepes to help to regulate its populations in Florida. So for the past 2 years, I've been working studying some interactions that could affect the establishment and the fitness of this parasitoid in its new environment. And one of the interactions that I studied is the interaction with the host plant of Diaprepes. It happens that Diaprepes is a highly polyphagous species with more than 270 known host species, plant species, including agricultural, ornamental, native, and invasive plant species. So this means that Haeckeliana will have to locate and parasitize its host in a very complex environment. Diaprepes females lay eggs in clusters that are sealed in between two leaves. The female secretes a substance that sticks two adjacent leaves together, conferring protection to the egg mass. Haeckeliana searches for these egg masses by walking on the leaf surface of the host plant. And upon detection of the egg mass, Haeckeliana inserts the ovipositor through the leaf until reaching the weevil egg. So this aspect about Haeckeliana's searching behavior suggests that the complexity of the leaf surface structure could have a big influence in its ability to parasitize its host. And moreover, we know that Haeckeliana is a trichogrammaton, a group of parasitoids that are characterized by being small. And there's increasing evidence in the literature suggesting that the presence of leaf trichomes on the leaf surface of the plants have a negative effect on the searching behavior of small parasitoids, especially on trichogrammatids. So under this scenario, I decided to formulate the following hypothesis, that the reproductive success of Haeckeliana esperata is dependent on the host plant of Diaprepes abreviatus. And I stated three objectives. First, to determine the successful parasitism of Haeckeliana esperata on Diaprepes abreviatus eggs on different host plants. Second, to determine how surface structures such as leaf trichomes can influence the searching behavior of Haeckeliana. And third, to determine the relationship between leaf trichome density, leaf thickness, and the searching speed of Haeckeliana to parasitism. And for doing this, I selected six host plants. The first two are fruit crops. The first one is loquat, which has a high density of unicellular trichomes in its leaves. The second one is lime, which has glabrous leaves or leaves lacking trichomes. The third one is pygmy palm, an ornamental plant that has a low density of thick and prominent trichomes. The fourth plant is elephant grass, which is an invasive species that has a high density of long unicellular trichomes and two plants of the same species, Conocarpus erectus, the green buttonwood, which has glabrous leaves, and the silver buttonwood, which has its leaves covered with a high density of trichomes. And to test the successful parasitism of Haeckeliana on Diapropis X laid in those plants, I designed a very simple experiment in a no-choice condition. First, I formed bouquets with foliage of each of the host plants, and I introduced the bouquets in a cage along with 200 weevils. I allowed oviposition and feeding by the weevils for 24 hours, and after that I removed the bouquet and I standardized the number of egg masses and the leaf area per bouquet. The standardized bouquets were then introduced in another cage where I released 10 one-day-old Haeckeliana females and I allowed parasitism for 24 hours. After that, I opened the egg masses and I calculated the percent of parasitism and the natural mortality. This experiment had 7 replicates and I used a various analysis using egg mass size as a covariate. And these are the results for that first experiment. You can see that Haeckeliana was able to parasitize egg masses in all the host plants, but it failed to parasitize egg masses in the control treatment that were egg masses laid in wax paper. But interestingly, the plants with a high trichome density had a lower parasitism when compared with the plants that are glabrous or that have a low trichome density. And if we look at the two plants of the same species, the parasitism was 10 times greater in the glabrous morph when compared with the pubescent morph. So this led us to the second experiment that was designed to test the specific effect of leaf trichomes on the searching behavior of Haeckeliana. And this time I only used the two plants of the same species, Conocarpus erectus. And I studied the searching behavior of Haeckeliana in leaves kept intact and leaves where I removed the trichomes by two methods. First, by shaving them manually, and second, by treating them with a non-phytotoxic detergent called Tridon X100. And what I did is I released a single female in the middle of each surface, and I traced the movements, the walking patterns of Haeckeliana using a video camera equipped with a macro lens. This procedure allowed me to obtain digital images of the paths of Haeckeliana, and these digital images were processed using an analyzing software. So this whole methodology allowed me to obtain the total search time, the time spent motionless, the total distance traveled, the walking speed, and the searching speed that is often the parameter of interest, because this is a quantitative measurement of how far a parasitoid can search in a certain period of time. This experiment had 13 replicates, and again, I used a variance analysis and a 2K test. And these are the results for this second experiment. I'm only showing here the parameter searching speed. And I have the treatments here. I put in green the smooth surfaces, and in red the pubescent surface, and in blue the surfaces where I removed the trichomes. We can see that the parasitism was three times greater in the smooth surfaces when compared with the pubescent surface. And when I removed the trichomes by any of the two methods, the searching speed of Haeckeliana increased. So overall, the results of this second experiment showed that the presence of trichomes in the leaf surface have a negative effect on the searching efficiency of my parasitoid. And the third experiment is a combination of the two previous experiments, only that doing them simultaneously and again using the 6 host plants. A single population of Haeckeliana was divided in two, such that the first half was used to determine the percent of parasitism, just as in the first experiment that I showed you, and the second half of the population was used to determine the searching speed, just as in the second experiment I showed you. And in addition, I calculated or measured the trichome density and the leaf thickness of all the host plants. And to establish the relationship between this variable and these three variables, I conducted a multiple regression analysis, and this had 10 replicates. And this table here summarizes the results of that third experiment. We can see that searching speed was the variable that was highly related to parasitism, but neither trichome density nor leaf thickness were related to parasitism. So I think that the type of trichomes are more important than the number of them, and I didn't find any effect of the leaf thickness within the 6 host plants that I tested. So To conclude, I can say that the reproductive success of Achelliana is dependent on the host plant of Diapropis arrebiatus. That plants with the smooth surfaces favor the searching efficiency of Achelliana, and the presence of some trichomes could have a negative effect on the reproductive success of Achelliana. That searching speed is a parameter tightly linked to parasitism and could be used to test the suitability of other host plants for the establishment of Achelliana. And I propose to use this information to design strategies to maximize the chances of establishment of my parasitoid in Florida. Thank you very much, and I will take any questions. The question is if the trichomes differed in length in the plants that I used in my experiments, and yes they did. The trichomes in the elephant grass are longer than any others, and are long and stiff, whereas the trichomes in Lockwood are long, but they are all curled in the leaf surface, and yes, there is variation in the length of these trichomes. Thank you. Yes.
Is the role for a chemical cue in the system as well, considering that the
lab papers? Oh, definitely. There must be a chemical radiation. Sorry, the question was if there is a chemical signal or a chemical mediating the response. There could be, I didn't look at that, but if you're referring to the wax paper, I think I didn't find any parasitism there because Achelliana is unable to penetrate the paper because it's very dense, more dense than any other surface.
Good morning. My talk today is going to be the dispersal behavior of Trichogramma estreniae in potato fields. Trichogramma estreniae is a small parasitic wasp endemic to China. It was brought to the U.S. as a potential biological control agent of European corn borer and is now used in sweet corn in the northeastern U.S. and also as a potential agent in potatoes and peppers. Our study was done in four commercial potato fields on the eastern shore of Virginia. Two releases were made each year in spatially separated fields with approximately 500,000 wasps released in the center of each field. And around the field, the presence of Trichogramma was monitored with sticky cards and sentinel egg masses. On the graph here on the left, the little circles you see were the monitoring points spaced equal distance apart. So as I said, the sentinel egg masses that monitored the parasitism of done by Trichogramma estreniae, we used egg masses of European corn borer glued to strips of wax paper. Around each sticky card there was 5 sentinel egg masses. Once we collected these at regular intervals, we examined them microscopically for Trichogramma, and also the egg masses were then placed into gelatin capsules to look for signs of parasitism. We used a diffusion model as described by Rodengander to look at the dispersal behavior of Trichogramma. The formula you see here represents the normal distribution of a one-dimensional diffusion model with individuals y at distance x times t. The model also had constants for the mortality or immigration of individuals and also the velocity or drift. The model assumes that there's random diffusion of individuals, but we know usually external factors such as wind and weather, that's not necessarily so, so that velocity drift constant incorporates that. To graphically describe the distribution, we use the parametric form, or half of the normal distribution, which has our individuals at time zero, and also the proportion reduction of individuals with distance. To graphically describe this, we use the one-dimensional analysis because it simplifies our two-dimensional study area. And as you see over there on the right, we basically just mirrored the image across an axis to do the two-dimensional study. In the previous slide, our parameter B, which was our proportion reduction of individuals with distance, we could use this to then find coefficient D, which is our diffusion coefficient, which described dispersal in meters squared per day. We could then use this to find an X98 value, or a distance that encompasses 98% of the individuals at that time. We also wanted to look at the spatial correlation between the distribution of parasitized sentinels and also our sticky card captures. They did this using a Kramer-von Mises test. Both the sets of data were superimposed onto a Cartesian grid, and then a cumulative distribution function for each cardinal direction was used. The null hypothesis of this test was that there was no statistical difference between the pairwise population distributions of the parasitization and the trap catches. So our results. The results here are field 1 from 2005. The box over on the right shows the mean X98 value, which is an average of field 1 and field 2. But as you can see, the most catches we had were around, were in the beginning days 1 and 4, and also close to the release point. 0 would be the release point on that bottom graph. And most of the catches were about within the 16-meter range. This is field 2. It's the same average value there on the right. And you can see similar results, except in this graph there is a flattening effect around day 10. This is when we weren't catching wasps anymore. These graphs show the parasitism for 2005. You can see a similar type of regression as we had for the sticky card captures. And about the same X98 values. For parasitism it was 27 meters. For this, it's 26 and 21. The highlighted box there shows you the parameters that we use for that initial equation to look at the diffusion model. The highlighted areas show you when we caught the most wasps at that time, which was right around day 4. And that YT value shows you about the population left within the field at our time of sampling. And what you can see from this chart is that initially we released 500,000 wasps, and from our model we were estimating we were only catching about 2,000 to 4,000 wasps at each individual time. So there was quite a lot of wasps that were migrating or migrating out of the field. Here's all results for 2006. Again, you can see similar trends from 2005. Our mean 98 value